Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes in caves. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mega Beach in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Long Box, guys. My name is Tom Strange, and with me, as always, is some of my best friends since I was a little kid so many years ago. Josh Hopper, how you doing? What are you drinking?
Still a little under the weather and just jamming down the water.
Jamming down the water. Tommy, my little diabetic puppy friend, how are you doing and what are you drinking?
I am drinking some Jameson Special Reserve. And it is delicious.
It sounds delicious. Mikey, Mike, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I am drinking a 7-7, thanks to Embassy Suites, although I don't really think it's actually Seagram's, but whatever. And I am doing fabulous because today I don't normally have cable TV, but I was watching a back episode of Bob's Burgers, and I realized that Louise drives a green machine.
Wow. Huh. She does have a green machine. Those things are terrific.
And horrific.
There's a supervillain vehicle right there. You can barely turn those things. They were death traps. Today we're going to be talking about the nation that brings us vibranium. That's right. This entire episode today we're going to be talking about the Black Panther movie and the nation of Wakanda. There are going to be spoiler alerts. We're going to be getting into the characters. So, if you don't want to know anything about these characters, if you're one of the three people who haven't seen Black Panther already, pause this, go see the movie, then come back to watch the podcast. Fair enough? All right. Did everyone like the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I think it was one of the better Marvel movies. When I first walked out, I was on like a super high. I'm like, this is the best Marvel movie ever. And I kind of came down from that high. I'm like, maybe Captain America the First Avenger was the best one. But this was really, really good. I know we're going to have to go goat on this at some point because I really like that movie. But this, I thought this was way up there. I really enjoyed it. Who's going to do the back? I think I'm doing the background on Wakanda itself. Do you want me to just jump in on that or does someone want to go first? Because I've been talking.
Yeah, go ahead and do Wakanda. But by the way, before we go back to – let's go back to – Captain America, the First Avenger is your favorite Captain America movie?
It might be my favorite Marvel movie, actually.
Wow. They had an homage to Captain America, the First Avenger, in this movie, The Black Panther. Do you remember what it was?
An homage. Well, they had Bucky at the end.
Nope.
No, what was it?
The hand grenade. Remember? Steve Rogers jumped on that hand grenade.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones threw the hand grenade. Black Panther does the same thing.
Does the same thing. Handles it better.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, he had a suit that was going to protect him.
Yeah. So yeah.
There's always that.
He didn't get up and go, is this a test? A test? A test?
Bad pass.
But we're not talking about Captain America the First Avenger. As much as I love that movie, we're talking about Black Panther. And you can't really talk much about Black Panther without talking about where he comes from, which is the secret nation of Wakanda. Now, the etymology of the word Wakanda is kind of not anyone can point at any one thing, and no one's actually said exactly where they came up with Wakanda. Wakanda, of course, invented by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. There are a couple of times it was mentioned before that Native Americans of the Great Plains have a Wakanda tribe. Edgar Rice Burroughs mentions a man-eater in the story Man-Eater in 1955 and 1915, which was published in 1957, of a tribe called the Akambi or the Wakamba. So no one's really 100% sure the first time the word Wakanda shows up, but we are sure that it is awesome. So Wakanda is a nation unto itself somewhere in East Africa, north of Tanzania. The reason that it is so rich in minerals is because a meteorite made of vibranium crashed there eons and eons ago. the meteorite itself is not only, you know, famed for the vibranium, which is an incredible metal that has sound absorbing qualities and energy absorbing qualities, but it also works as a mutagen on things around it, like the plants, which is where the heart-shaped herb that gives T'Challa and T'Chaka the Black Panther power. It also mutates some of the local white apes. So if you kill them and drink their blood, you also get the superpower. Now, because Wakanda has all these extra mutants and the vibranium, they start developing technology a little different than ours. It's more advanced in most ways, but it relies heavily on the vibranium. So if you take away the vibranium, they kind of lose some of their technological advances, which happens a couple times. Wakanda is a secretive nation. They don't do a lot with the outside world, and they don't show their hand so much. They only sell off minute amounts of vibranium to very high bidders, and that's mostly just to send their best and brightest students to foreign countries as either war dogs or as scholars. So, you know, if you're smart, you get to go to MIT, you get to go to some of the best colleges in the outside world and bring all that knowledge back also. Wakanda is mostly hidden via force fields and illusions, and most people think of it as a backwards third country nation, when in fact it is probably the most technologically advanced nation on the planet. And that's a brief history of Wakanda. I could easily talk the entire time, but I don't want to. Mike, who's your first thing to talk about?
So you mentioned the war dogs, or the dogs of war, also known as the Hattu Sarase. They are the secret police. They were created in 1999 by Christopher Priest and Mark Teixeira. The idea from the volume 3 of Black Panther, issue number 4. T'Chaka, it had been a long tradition of having the secret police go out and be spies into the world. And Wakanda has the largest spy network in the world. It's interesting, in the movie, they still talk about the dogs of war. Nakia calls herself a war dog in the movie, although traditionally in the comic book, she's part of the Dora Milaje. But specifically for the war dogs themselves, in the comic books, they're led by a guy called the White Wolf, also known as Hunter. And the origin story behind Hunter is that he was a white kid. His plane crashes in Wakanda. His parents are killed, and he is brought up by King T'Chaka. Because of the color of his skin and that he's an outsider, he's shunned by most of the Wakandans, and T'Chaka wants to make him feel welcome, and he's actually the heir until T'Challa is born. When T'Challa is born, T'Challa's mother dies in childbirth, and Hunter holds that against T'Challa for the rest of his life. When T'Challa comes to power after T'Chaka dies, he disbands the war dogs, and they become mercenaries in the comics, led by Hunter. A few other things of note, you know, in the movie, the White Wolf is Bucky, who has been trained in espionage by the KGB. It would not be a surprise that the Dogs of War would be headed by Bucky Barnes. In the comic books, the suits of the war dogs are all white, and they have the ability to cloak themselves and turn invisible. They're laced with vibranium, and so they're every bit as formidable as the Black Panther's costume. And recently in the Ta-Nehisi Coates run, the war dogs have come back, and Black Panther has been using them. In the movie, they said they named 3 cities where the war dogs were ready to start the overthrow. Do you guys remember those 3 cities?
Wasn't one of them London?
London was one.
I'll go New York on one.
New York was the other. And the third one?
Was it Moscow?
No.
Singapore?
Hong Kong.
Tokyo.
Hong Kong.
And what's important about those 3 cities in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, guys?
Those are all layways for the different lay stones of power.
Yes, the Sanctum Sanctorums are in all 3 of those cities, and that's where they were ready to start the revolution. Just thought it was cool.
Yep, nice little homage. And we mentioned briefly there Ramona. Let me just give you a little bit more of her backstory. Ramonda, played by Angela Bassett, was T'Challa's mother. She, in the comic book, supposedly dies in childbirth. But she actually does come back a couple of different times, a couple of different ways. When T'Challa was a teenager, Ramonda was abducted during a protest by a white supremacist group named Antis Pretorius, who made her just totally disappear. She was brought back to his mansions, where she was hidden away from the public and abused for years until T'Challa brought her back. During a terrorist attack on the Golden City perpetuated by suicide bombers on behalf of a rebellious force known as the People, she is gravely injured, put into a forced coma, and is thought to never be able to walk again. But, of course, being comic book, she does overcome this and, starts walking again. So her backstory becomes a little convoluted. It is true, though, that she is she gives birth to Shuri. Oh, you know what? I think I actually have this a little bit wrong. So the Ramonda from the comic books and the T'Challa's mother are actually absolutely different people. Shuri, she is in the comic book definitely Shuri's mom, but in the comic book she is not T'Challa's mom, who does die during childbirth. My mistake there. Thank you. That brings us over to something from Josh's side of the plate. What do you got there, Josh?
Sure, I'm talking about the main man, T'Challa himself. Played by Chadwick Boseman, born 1977, November 29th, in Anderson, South Carolina. His career started out pretty quick when he was young, but he got his big break in 2013 when he played Jackie Robinson in the movie 42, and then ended up playing James Brown and the god Thoth in separate films, of course. From a comic book perspective, T'Challa's first appearance, Fantastic Four 52, July 1966, by Stan Lee and Kirby. He predated the Black Panther political group, even though his name changed briefly, but was changed back. And he's considered one, if not the first African-American superhero to have his own major comic book series. In the movie...
Did you say African or African-American superhero?
Oh, I should... you're right. African. Yeah. Omitted. The movie, during a meeting ratifying the Sokovian Accords at the Vienna International Center, T'Chaka, his father, the current Black Panther, is killed by an explosion, and T'Challa has to return to Wakanda to claim his birthright and throne. And that sort of kicks off where we left off in the Marvel Universe and where we pick up with T'Challa, a.k.a. Black Panther, at the beginning of this film.
Excellent. Tommy, what do you got? What characters are you deconstructing for us?
Well, since Josh was talking about T'Challa and T'Chaka, I'm going to talk about the Dora Milaje, or Damage, as Mikey was pronouncing it, first appeared in the Black Panther.
Wait. Let's get a handle on how that's pronounced. Mikey?
Dora Milaje?
Dora Milaje.
Dora Milaje.
All right.
Dora Milaje.
All right.
Which first appeared in Black Panther Volume 3, Number 1, written by Christopher Priest with art by Mark Teixeira. They had similarities to the Dahomey Amazons, an all-female military regiment in the Kingdom of Dahomey in West Africa, which is now the Republic of Benin. In the movies and in the comic books, they were both kind of T'Challa's elite guard. In the comic books, they were also brought up to be possible wife material for the leaders of the tribes in Wakanda. So that's kind of a difference. Whereas in the movies, they were just set up to be protectors of Wakanda.
All right. Well, that was pretty succinct. And who was one of the more famous ones of the Dora Milaje in that movie?
Yeah, you're probably referring to Okoye, the general who's in charge of the Dora Milaje.
I was.
She's played by Dania Guerrera. Of Walking Dead fame, although it's hard to tell that it's Michonne because she's got the shaved head. She totally kicks ass in this movie, and she also kicks ass in the comic books. She first appeared in Black Panther Volume 3, Number 1, back in 1998, again created by Christopher Priest. She serves as the chauffeur slash bodyguard for the Black Panther, along with...
I'm sorry, point of order?
Sure.
Female driver of a car is called a chauffeuse.
My bad. The chauffeuse and bodyguard for the Black Panther. The two bodyguards that accompanied T'Challa through his mission in New York were Okoye and Nakia, who, as we know from the movie, is not a Dora Milaje. But, LT, you were going to talk about Nakia.
Yes, I can talk about Nakia. So Nakia in the Marvel Universe was a war dog. She was sent out into the world, and her main mission was to help out into the world, and to she tried to help other females in the world, and she saw it as her mission to help bring Wakanda-like things to the rest of the world, and she wanted Wakanda to share its resources with the rest of the world, which was kind of the opposite of what Wakanda's tradition was. And she didn't want to sit idly by with the isolationism that Wakanda had done for centuries. Black Panther was in love with Nakia in the movie and was trying to get her to stay in Wakanda, whereas kind of in the comic books, it was the exact opposite. In the comic books, Nakia was...
That bitch is crazy. You can say it. That bitch was crazy in the comics.
Yes. Yes, in the comic books, Nakia was infatuated with the Black Panther and tried to do anything she could to get the Black Panther to notice her. She, you know, at one point jumped into a body of water and almost drowned herself just so that the Black Panther would save her. She became ostracized by Wakanda and became malice and tried to do everything to try to get the love of the Black Panther, and totally and completely the opposite of the movie, in that she tried everything, magic, pheromones, herbs, everything that she could to get the love of the Black Panther in the comics. She tried destroying past loves of the Black Panther. That bitch was crazy, as Mike said. Whereas in the cinematic universe, it was the exact opposite.
Josh, we haven't heard of many of yours. What do you got next?
So we got Shuri, the little sister, played by the lovely Letitia Wright. She was born October 31st in 1993. She's of British and Guyanese descent. She got her start on British TV, most notably in two series about the gay culture in London, one series called Cucumber and the other called Banana. Shuri, the comic book character, first appeared in Black Panther number 2 in May of 2005, created by Reggie Hudlin. His real name's Reginald, but I feel close enough to him, call him Reggie. I've never met the man. And John Romita Jr. She had superior physical prowess, a genius-level intellect, and she actually succeeds T'Challa as Black Panther, and she actually develops some powers beyond the original, including some shape-changing and stone form, and she's considered to have an intellect somewhere up, surpassing Tony Stark in the sort of inventing and technology array. In the movie, she's very similar to her comic book character at the start. You know, she's the genius inventor. Some of her stuff is surpassing Tony or getting close to, I think a lot of it's past Iron Man, but some of it is missing. Some of the functionality I would put in a super suit. She is the sister.
That's very cute, colonizer.
Yeah, well, you know.
And also, saying, a lot, they take slightly different paths. Is really, I mean, they're the parallel technologies kind of veer off. And I think, you know, Wakanda's to do some things better, and I think the Western does a few other things.
All that technology, just let the poor man fly. In many ways, she's also sort of the Q to T'Challa's Bond, sort of outfitting him appropriately for every mission. And she's also his person in the chair, sort of the commander behind the scenes for a lot of his missions.
Guy in the chair. All right, well, I want to talk about another great character from that one, and that would be Wakabi. Wakabi was the kind of the sidekick or the border guard for T'Challa, a very important character in the comic books, but very different in the comic books. In the comic books, Wakabi never really, you know, attacks or tries to overthrow the Black Panther. The Wakabi of this movie is so angry that the Claw has never been brought to justice that he teams up with Killmonger, who does bring the body of Claw to them. In the movie and in the comic book, Wakabi's parents are killed by Claw. In the comic book, it's during a brief time when Claw was in charge of Wakanda and was forcing people to mine vibranium for him. So in the movie and in the comic book, they're vastly different, just like the last character we talked about. So just try to remember that there's a couple of big differences here. Wakabi never really turns against the Black Panther in comic book form. Mike, you got one of my favorite characters. Tell us a little bit about Man-Ape.
M'Baku, also known as Man-Ape, also known as the White Gorilla, is played by the amazing Winston Duke. In the comic books, Man-Ape first appears in Avengers number 62 back in 1969, created by Roy Thomas and John Buscema. He has been a member of the Lethal Legion, the Masters of Evil, and Villains for Hire. In the comic book, he derives his powers from eating the heart of a white ape and drinking its blood from the Jabari worship the white apes and the white ape god. He is the cultural and spiritual and political leader of the Jabari, and he is one of the greatest warriors of Wakanda, like he is portrayed in the movie. They did a really good job of changing his armor a little bit, but still using that gorilla mask effectively, and he has been a nemesis and thorn in the side of T'Challa for quite a long time and will continue to be, because T'Challa has to put up with him because he's one of the chieftains of the five Wakanda tribes.
One of my favorite little bits with the Man-Ape was when at the wedding of T'Challa and Oro, he gets a little drunk and starts telling stories, which is hilarious. Tommy, you got something?
I've got to say, I think we can all agree that of the Black Panther movie, M'Baku was the hero of the film.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
M'Baku saves the day, without a doubt.
Completely the hero of the film.
I wouldn't say completely. You got to give a little credit to War Rhinos. Josh?
War Rhinos were on the wrong side of history.
Yeah.
War Rhinos were still side. Awesome, though.
Wrong side of the street. Wrong side of history.
Fine. And speaking on the wrong side of history, let's talk about the main villain of the movie, who some people have been describing as the villain Marvel has needed for such a long time. Eric Killmonger, otherwise known as just straight out Killmonger.
And the Human Torch.
And the Human what?
The Human Torch. He played the Human Torch in the Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Dude's got range.
Because I wanted to forget about
that. Range.
I mean, the dude killed the Fantastic Four film before he even entered Wakanda.
That's four. Those are four of those little marks right there.
It's right there.
The first four he put in there was from that movie. Terrific. So Eric Killmonger was the son of one of the War Dogs, but in the comic book, he's just the son of the brother of T'Challa. He is angry. Oh, go ahead.
No, he's not the son of the brother of T'Challa in the comics, right?
I thought he was, but point of fact, has anyone got something to correct me on there? I got it.
For one, it wouldn't be T'Challa. It would be T'Chaka.
I meant T'Chaka, thank you.
Okay.
You got it. I'm sorry. You got me on that one. So, in his early life, N'Jaku's father was pressed into working for the villain Claw on that vibranium mine during that episode when Wakanda was taken over by Claw. So Eric Killmonger hates Claw in both the movie and in the Marvel Universe for slightly different reasons. In the Marvel Universe, of course, it's T'Chaka that kills his father. In the comic books, it's Claw that kills his father. Doesn't really matter all that much because he grows to hate the fact that Wakanda let his father die. He thinks Wakanda would be better off under his rule. He wants to go back to a more primitive Wakanda, and this drives him. Now, he is a great character. You feel a lot of catharsis. If you don't feel catharsis for a villain, then, you know, he's just a comic book villain, in air quotes. and there's no real depth to him. But this character had depth. He wanted to rid the world of colonialism the way he saw it, and he was willing to do anything to do that. To those ends, he joined the military, and he killed people all over the world, including in Africa, which hurt him deeply, just so he could get his shot at killing T'Challa and taking back Wakanda. So this is a great character with a lot of depth. I think we're going to see more of him, even though they kill him off in the MCU, but that doesn't have to end. That doesn't have to be anyone's end, as we all know. So I'm hoping we're going to see more of the Killmonger in the future. Anyone have anything to add? This is a great character.
Well, in the comic books, they pull stuff right out of the comics. From the Panther's Rage, Killmonger actually defeats T'Challa in hand-to-hand combat and throws him off Warrior's Falls, just like in the movie. In the comic books, he wears that same kind of mask that Killmonger wears in the movies. They take a lot of stuff right out of the comic books and throw it into this movie. And Killmonger is beautifully represented as he is. He is Black Panther's most dangerous foe in the comic books, and it's the same in the movie.
I couldn't agree more. This was just a great character, really well fleshed out. And I do hope we see more of him. Like I said, just because we kill someone off, I love how he decides to take the mask just because he's feeling it. What a great character. Who has anything else to add to the conversation? Tommy?
Well, I mean, since we're talking about Killmonger and his motivations, it might be a good segue to talk about Zuri, which is one of the people that was directly responsible for Killmonger's dad dying. Zuri, of course, being the spy that was sent to spy on Njobu, T'Chaka's brother and Killmonger's dad in the movie. Zuri was a shaman and a trusted advisor to T'Chaka, and he was sent to as James to spy on Njobu, one of the war dogs in the Western world. And he was one of the people that left Killmonger behind in the Western world as an orphan when they could have taken him back to Wakanda in the movie. In the comic books, Zuri was also, you know, a trusted confidant of T'Chaka, but he was more of a veteran warrior of Wakanda, and he was also, you know, a friend of T'Challa, but he is very similar in the comics as he was in the movies in similar roles.
All right, well put, my friend, well put. Does anyone else have anything to add to that one?
Played by Forrest Whitaker, he does a great job.
I love Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker always does a good job.
He was so good in Ghost Dog. That's one of my favorite Forrest Whitakers of all time. He's good in everything, though.
But yeah, Ghost Dog was amazing.
Yeah. We can all agree on that. Who has anything else to add? I'm sure we have a few things that we haven't hit yet.
I got the claw.
Oh, the claw. Baby, give me the claw.
That's right. Played by the talented Andy Serkis, born April 20th, 1964 in West London. He had a lot of minor parts, but when he got his big break, when he landed the role of Gollum in 2001, first of all, can you believe that movie came out in 2001? Launched his extensive career as the man behind the special effects. He went on to play King Kong, Caesar in Planet of the Apes, Supreme Leader Snoke. His stop motion and background action and voice and face have been the model for many a villain. So it's kind of nice to see him in front of the camera with his big old ugly mug out there for all of us to see. Now, Claw in the comic books first appeared in Fantastic Four, number 53 of August of 1966. Once again, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. He's the son of a Nazi scientist, eventually becoming a creature of pure energy, able to project and manipulate sound. He goes through a couple of different iterations about how he and vibranium interact. At one point, he's actually vulnerable to vibranium as it absorbs his energy signature, and then later on, it actually enhances his form. But in this movie, Claw is still flesh and blood, but still moving closer to the Claw we all know and love. But his characters, Ulysses Claw, was introduced in Age of Ultron as a weapons dealer who could obtain vibranium for Ultron himself. And in the course of that deal, he gets one of his arms severed. And then he shows up in this movie with a little bit of extra juice hiding in his arm.
Little extra juice! It's great that we mentioned a little bit of that character's backstory. In the Marvel Universe, being pure energy, he's one of those characters that you actually cannot kill, because energy cannot be destroyed and energy cannot be created. So they have a get-out-of-jail-free card in the comic book when it comes to Claw. I don't think that's going to carry over into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Anyone disagree with that?
I disagree.
You disagree? You think they're going to bring him back?
He's going to pop up in the next movie, and Thanos is going to turn him into a being of pure sound.
Pure sound.
Pow.
One thing I forgot to mention was that Killmonger was played by Michael B. Jordan, who I think stole the show. Whenever he was on screen, he just ate the scenery up.
Also,
I couldn't take my eyes off him.
The greatest basketball player of all time.
Michael B. Jordan? I think you're thinking of Michael S. Jordan.
Is that okay?
I have no idea what Michael Jordan's middle name is.
I don't know why.
I'm going to make it Samuel.
Okay.
Just in case.
Sure, why not?
That's fair.
Sure, why not? Does anyone have anything to add about this, one of the greatest Marvel movies of all time? Certainly one of the most watched Marvel movies of all time in the theaters. This being put out about a week after we're talking, just surpassed week five. It just made week five as number one movie, making it the most popular Marvel movie put out yet.
Well, we haven't talked about T'Chaka yet, so we should probably talk about him. T'Chaka first appeared in Fantastic Four number 53, created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Chieftain of Wakanda, ascended the throne after the death of King Azuri the Wise. During 1941, Captain America went to Wakanda and met T'Chaka together with Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos. They fought Red Skull and Baron Strucker. So T'Chaka, been in the Marvel Universe in the comics for a really long time. You know, obviously he popped up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Civil War and had an impact there, but still, you know, a character that's been around in the Marvel Comics universe for a long time.
So I think it was brilliant in the movie that they had John Connie's son playing the younger version of T'Chaka.
I think it was laziness. Yeah. I think it was lazy.
No, I mean, the guy looks totally like T'Chaka.
Yeah, you could have done it with some CGI.
Yeah, they didn't have to spend millions of dollars of CGI to Michael Douglas, the guy, to making him look younger.
Michael Douglas, the guy?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's not verbify
it's
Michael
a thing.
Douglas.
That's a thing now.
It's totally a thing.
And we are overlooking, we talked about Claw being played by Andy Serkis, but we are missing Everett K. Ross, played by Martin Freeman. So the two token white guys were actually there in the movie.
It's true. The Tolkien white guys.
That's right.
One good guy, one bad guy. We're staying on neutral ground, white people. We're okay.
Everett K. Ross first appeared in Khazar number 17 in 1998, created by
Khazar.
Is it Khazar? I always thought
it's Khazar.
Okay. It's Khazar.
Khazar is not a C. With an umlaut. A schwa. That's diphthong.
I'm pronouncing the A as ah instead of as a long A. The K or the C doesn't matter in that.
It matters to God.
Yeah, but not into the pronunciation.
It matters to the God of pronunciation.
Anyways, created by Kenny Martinez and, of course, Christopher Priest. Priest wanted to have a way for white readers who make up the majority of comic book readers to have an in and a point of view for the world of Wakanda that he was creating in Black Panther Volume 3. So he took the whitest dude he could imagine. He based him off of Chandler Bing from the Friends. He was a State Department representative who thought that Wakanda was a backworld nation and was tasked to just follow around T'Challa, the king of Wakanda, make sure he doesn't get into any trouble. And Everett K. Ross kept on getting into more and more and more trouble because he is a buffoon in the comic books. He is the comic relief, and he is awesome in the comics. In the movie, he's actually played kind of straight, although he is a source of humor in the movie itself. He was not an experienced Air Force pilot, and in no way would he ever be a hero if you use just strictly the comic book character, but they had to change it, I guess, for the movie.
I personally feel that Martin Freeman's American accent was mocking me personally.
Right? Like,
hello.
I don't know if he was doing it on purpose or if his accent is just bad, but wow. Wow. I mean, I get it. I get it, British people. I get it. We all do your accent and we do it piss poor. And now Martin Freeman just stepped in a Black Panther and gave it right back to us. Congratulations, Martin.
Hello, everyone. I know you're listening. Hamburger sandwich and a fanny pack. Thank you.
Pretty much. Yeah, that was him the whole movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they would have been better off if they just let Matthew Perry play him.
That would have been hilarious.
That would have been perfect casting. Well, I thought it was pretty perfect casting all the way around. I mean,
This way, they do get to have him and Benedict Cumberbatch in a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie in the future.
Also, they have Iron Man and Doctor Strange both playing Sherlock Holmes.
By the way, if at some point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Captain America doesn't say something stupid and Cumberbatch and the other guy, Robert Downey Jr., if they don't both turn slowly to Captain America and go, no shit, Sherlock, at the same time.
No, it's funnier if Cumberbatch turns to Robert Downey Jr. and says, no shit, Sherlock.
I think it's funny if they both say it at the same time to Captain America.
I think it's funny if they say it to each other.
That would be pretty funny, too. They're both just pronouncing something and they both go, no shit, Sherlock. All right. Well, this has been an extremely long episode of the Long Box, guys. So I think we shall eschew the front of the Long Box, the back of the Long Box. Maybe go on a tangent if Josh has one. Josh, you got a tangent?
I'm still not even talking about the movie. We've just been filling out characters.
Yeah.
We never even talked about. Let's not even get to that.
So, the beginning of that movie, I just watched it yesterday again, and I did not realize, because, of course, the first time I saw it, I didn't make the connection. That is Nujabo talking to Eric Killmonger, telling him the story of the people of Wakanda in that very beginning sequence where they go over the history. I didn't realize it the first time I saw it because I didn't even know about those characters. So, seeing it the second time around gave me a much better base, I guess, to say. Did you guys pick that up the first time you watched it?
Yeah.
I thought about it at the end, but I wasn't sure until you just mentioned it because I've only seen it once. But I'm like, I wonder if that was, I have to watch it again.
Yeah, which Michael B. Jordan, Eric Killmonger says, you know, imagine a kid from Oakland believing in fairy tales. It goes back to the fairy tales that his dad was telling him. It all makes perfect sense. It also explains why he was able to know what the traditions of Wakanda were, so he could train himself to be ready to take over and defeat somebody in one-on-one combat. And then later on, you know, he waited until after he knew T'Chaka was dead before he started enlisting Claw to help him steal the vibranium, knowing that it would track the Black Panther. All well-thought-out plans. I'm going to say next to Baron Zemo, probably the best thought out plan for a villain in the Marvel Universe, the cinematic universe.
Ooh, best long range thought out plan. That's going to have to be one of our GOAT episodes right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, cinematically, Zemo had it. Yeah, clearly.
Zemo won. Yeah. His goal was to split up the Avengers.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. His plan, you know, he succeeds.
Yeah.
He wins. Kind of nice.
Killmonger won, too. I mean, Killmonger did take over the country.
And, he did. Yeah.
And he has changed Wakanda. They fundamentally changed Wakanda, the way they view the outside world.
It's true.
He got half of what he wanted.
I know Tom is going to have a shirt that says Killmonger was right.
I already ordered my Killmonger was right t-shirt because Killmonger was right, goddammit.
I really hope Geek Orthodox is making that shirt for you.
Actually, I got it off of cafe t-shirts.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Sorry. No one else is making it.
Wakanda for today? Because now if they're going to share their shit, man, it's not going to be Wakanda forever.
That's what we're going to say when we watch it. Shut up, Tommy. Anyone else have any insights on the movie? There's a lot of little Easter eggs in there, tidbits that I thought were really great. I want to do a little fun Alec fact. Alec, if you're listening, here's a little fun Alec fact for you. Now, T'Challa has to drink the root of the this root that takes away his powers during ritual combat. The white ape doesn't have to drink anything to get rid of his powers. Why is that, guys? Because I have a theory.
Because in the movie, he doesn't have any superpowers.
Why not?
Because he's a vegetarian.
That's right. He's a vegetarian. He doesn't eat the heart of the white ape. They put one extra line in to totally explain away why one of the characters is supposed to have superpowers doesn't. And I thought it was hilarious. And I'm hoping it was done on purpose and not just a fun coincidence.
See, I was thinking something I caught that plot point, but I was thinking something slightly different, that after he ate the heart, he became a vegetarian, so no one could fool him into taking his powers away.
Ooh, it's not bad either. Oof. That's an agreeing oof.
It's true. If they're all vegetarians, why do they have fishermen?
It doesn't mean they don't trade with people.
Yeah.
And they might not be. They might be pescatarians.
And just because M'Baku's a vegetarian doesn't mean all his people are vegetarians.
Yeah. His children are vegetarians.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean, you know, live and let live.
I like the Easter eggs that they had in the Black Panther movie, including T'Challa bulldogging that war rhino down. Josh,
that was nice.
Where was that from?
That was great.
Oh, man, I had it up.
That's what she said.
War rhinos. I was sitting in the theater going, this is a great movie. But man, I wish there were some war rhinos. And then all of a sudden, war rhinos. Plus, I liked it when the war rhino charged and then licked the girl. I thought that was cute as hell.
Her name's Okoye. She's a general. Have a little respect.
Yeah.
General Okoye, who could totally kick my butt.
Yeah, she could.
Yeah, she could.
I love her wearing that wig and just using it as a weapon.
Big weapon. That fight scene, by the way, in the casino was a great fight scene.
Yes. Oh, and we didn't talk about Stan Lee's appearance.
Stan Lee needs some cash. He stole it from a casino, for God's sakes. Everyone chip in a couple of bucks.
What did you guys think about the bumper trailers that they had?
Not worth the wait.
I was going to say, not the best bumper trailers out of all of them.
Yeah.
I was hoping for some more Howard the Duck.
Well, you know, when I heard them, when Shuri says, you brought me another broken white boy, I thought, okay, that's pretty funny. I thought when they were calling him the White Wolf, that's when I got excited. I'm like, I know who that is. But I think most other people watching the movie were like, okay.
Okay, Buck is the White Wolf. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I kind of knew it from the comic books, but it didn't excite me enough to go, man, I'm so glad I waited this long. Him addressing the United Nations was good, but, I mean, it didn't blow my mind.
It was kind of like his Iron Man moment, Iron Man comes out, I am Iron Man. He's like, we are Wakanda.
We are Wakanda.
Although I did like Shuri's creations of the shoes that are really silent that she calls sneakers.
Sneakers. I did enjoy the "What are those?" Moment during the movie when she was referring to his sandals. What are those? Being a kind of a throwback to a meme that was very popular about 4 years ago now, but it was hilarious then. It's still hilarious to me.
See, I didn't even know it was a meme, but I still thought it was funny.
Look up "What are those?"
Well, I've seen.
You'll
it
see
since
a
then.
Bunch of people. Yeah, I've seen it since. Okay. Anyone else? Great fight scenes. I love the blankets that had the little shield built in. Yeah, all the stuff was great to me. I really enjoyed it.
I think
my favorite moment. Sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to run over you there. There was a picture like right after the premiere came out of like three little kids like with their hands up against the poster, in the theater, like looking up at all the heroes, and one little girl was pointing because she wanted to be that one. And honestly, that was my favorite part of the release of the film. I thought it was a very good Marvel film. I didn't think it was near the best. I thought the plot was well thought out and Killmonger was well thought out. The fight scenes were okay. I wasn't a huge fan of some of the CG in the fight scenes, but I was glad to see Circus or Claw get his at least got his laser arm, at least a portion of his powers. And I think we're going to see more of him in the next film. Also, I know there's usually some unnecessary crossover, and I don't know if you know, in Ant-Man and Wasp, the villain is Ghost, right? The guy who can phase, turn invisible, and was the hacker?
Yeah.
So I was wondering if they were going to take the white uniforms the White Wolves usually wear and sort of tie that back to Wakanda somehow for Ghost, rather than have it be self-invented.
Could be, yeah.
Maybe.
I can see that happening. Ghost, by the way, would have been a good one for our greatest of all time assassins. The power to become invisible, intangible, and an expert hacker. That makes for a pretty decent assassin right there.
Yeah, certainly your character. You can assassinate your character all over Facebook. It's the greatest hacker of all time, yeah.
You know what I don't like? Albanians. What? I didn't write that. What? Pineapple totally belongs on pizza. Tell me I'm wrong. What the hell?
You're not wrong. Pineapple's delicious on pizza.
It is.
You're an idiot.
Oh,
you're
no.
Both idiots.
Oh, you're
There's
wrong.
Two idiots. Okay.
So good.
Especially with
pineapples
bacon.
Don't belong on pizza, Alan.
157 people can't be wrong, Tom.
They might be. They might be, rabbits. They might be. All right, final words on the Black Panther movie. Like I said before, I thought this was one of my favorite ones until I, gave myself. The movie experience was really great for me. I had a great audience to watch it with. It was a terrific experience.
For me, 7 out of 10 for the maybe 8 out of 10 for the movie. But from a Heroes Who Look Like Me perspective, 10 out of 10. Just a great movie. A good social hit for everybody. Loved it.
Yeah, it was Tommy. A great film.
Yeah, a great film.
The effects were fantastic.
Oh, they were really, really good.
The closest.
It was a lot of gadgets, though.
My God.
Everywhere a gadget.
Yeah, that's part of the Black Panther's deal right now. If you want to read something that's as close to the comic books as possible, this is the closest movie to the comic books there's been. They pull source material right out of multiple different writers' runs. It's you could tell that Ryan Coogler, who was one of the writers, delved deep into it and was really influenced by the Christopher Priest run, which is, in my opinion, the best one.
Mikey, what do you got to plug?
I would like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can check him out at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, our fellow podcasters, Who's Next? If you like video games and sex robots and comic books, that's the podcast you should be listening to. And, of course, we love the Nola Nerd Couple and Movies Made Me.
Absolutely. Those are all great podcasts. I just want to give a quick shout-out to Who's Next also for shouting out to us during they told us recently that Starro had 5 assholes. I did not know that.
Yeah, that's better than us. We only have 4.
You've been holding out 2 assholes on me? Oh, there's 4 of us.
Bingo.
I get it. I thought maybe I could.
We were also counting your dog's asshole on that.
Hey.
Hey, what?
Crazy.
What the hell?
Easy.
Whoa.
Let's not get PETA involved. Hey, just everybody calm down.
Your shirt in your face. Why'd you navigate yourself back to the end of the line there?
Although it did say Super Horse right on the slide.
It did. It did.
Right on the slide. Gotta admit that. Tommy, anything to plug?
I'd like to plug geekorthodox.com, purveyors of fine t-shirts and other geeky things, such as stained glass prints and Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses.
And gutter repairs. I'd like to thank Friendly Neighborhood Comics because they finally finished construction. You know what? You know what happened to that place? It's clean again.
What?
That
it's
place
clean.
Is clean. Yeah. Finish the floor. Good for those guys. Congratulations, guys. Love the new space.
I would also like to promote our Patreon page. You go to Patreon.com/TheLongBoxGuys or just Longbox Guys Patreon in a search. That'll get you to us. We have an extra weekly podcast every single week called...
Just go to emphysema.com and check out our Patreon page.
It's funny because Tom's dying. It's called The GOAT, the greatest of all time. We do it every week that we do a podcast. We put it out for our Patreon listeners. If you want to throw us a few bucks to help defray the cost of the podcast, we really appreciate it. Tom may be having a heart attack right now. May not. Don't know. You'll have to tune in next week to find out. Or
is it weird that I taste pennies and my left arm just went numb?
No, not at all.
No. That's fine.
You should also follow us on Twitter. Tom does an excellent job as our social media maven. Yeah, that's at the long books. Yeah. At the long box, guys. Or you can like us on our Facebook page, which is also the long box, guys, which our good friend LT takes care of. Or you can check out our website. Holy moly, there's so many freaking ways to be socially media savvy. TheLongBoxGuys.com.
Well, that's great. All good stuff. And Josh, we're on the internet right now. The internet must be your sector. And you're not doing a good job of patrolling this shit.
I'm going to turn that sector over for a little while. We'll check in on it next week.
Good, because I just saw some Xan and Jaina porn that will not be erased from my mind. Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comic books.
Tommy, sweet little Tommy, any last words?
Please, mister, please give to our Patreon page.
That was almost sad enough. I'll give you an 8 out of the 10 sadness. And as for me, don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live a lot longer, and I love this movie, Wakanda Forever.
Wakanda Forever.
Wakanda for today.
We melt the highway miles away like sunfire. No stopping tonight.
How do you enjoy your tots other than by eating them?
Well, I mean, Tom was enjoying them with ketchup, but I think gravy is a much better way to enjoy your tots.
That's why you're a diabetic.